Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Are you new to investing and have savings you need to protect right now? With the Middle East war, the Ukraine war, and maybe Taiwan soon, need a new playbook that is safe. Allocate some gold now and avoid the frenzied panic of the unprepared. When fear reigns, gold protects the wise. Noble Gold Investments offers a free 5-ounce America the Beautiful coin with new IRAs this month. Shield your savings with a Noble Gold Investments IRA. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com, noblegoldinvestments.com, the only gold company I trust. That is Noble Gold Investments. Okay, everybody, happy Sunday. My conversation that I had with students at the University of Texas San Antonio, also with some prepared remarks. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That is freedom@charliekirk.com. No advertisers in this episode. Become a member at charliekirk.com and click on the members tab. That is charliekirk.com and click on the members tab. Email me, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That is freedom@charliekirk.com. Subscribe to our podcast, open up your podcast application, and type in Charlie Kirk Show. That is Charlie Kirk Show. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Get involved, start a high school, college chapter today, tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Wow. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. Thank you. That is not the usual college campus welcome that I am used to. I'll tell you what. Where were you in San Jose? I'll tell you what. There's Berkeley or Brown. Oh, my goodness. When I went to Brown, that's a fun story. Great to be here. First, I always do this. Thank you, police, for the great job that you've done here. Thank you. You guys do such a great job. Thank you. We honor the police, and it's not an easy job by any means. And thank you, of course, to our Turning Point USA chapter leaders. You guys do such a great job. I'm very biased, but I got to tell you, what Turning Point USA is doing is the most important work in the country. On high school and college campuses across the country, to pass down these values, to love America, pro-Constitution, pro-liberty, conservative values, if we don't do that, we're going to lose the entire country. And I could tell you, there's a lot more young conservatives out there than they'll ever lead you to believe, and you can see it here tonight. It should give you a lot of hope, a lot of hope. So the most fun part of tonight is the question and answer, so I'm not going to talk for too long. And I love the Q&A. It's great. If you disagree, you can go to the front of the line, get your question ready. You can do whatever you need to do. You can use ChatGPT, whatever. Best of luck. I guess got to be honest. But yeah, we'll have fun with there. I want to address a couple current event things. You never know what you're going to talk about at one of these things. I had this idea before the campus tour that I was going to kind of do all the different wars that are happening in the country, you know, like the war on men and all that sort of stuff. And then, there's obviously one that is brewing, and it all kind of connects together. But, you know, a week and a half ago, the terrible massacre that happened in Israel, it's the number one news story on the planet. And so much of it connects back to the country, right? So I don't want to overfixate on what's happening, you know, in Israel as far as that geopolitics, but how it actually connects to America is incredibly important in a variety of different ways, also including whether or not we're going to get into a world war. And for those of you that haven't turned 30, which I just did last weekend, draft is now in the rearview mirror, you guys should be keenly aware. Yesterday, I got this news alert on my phone, and you all saw it, and I want to read it. Israel rocket kills 500 people at Gaza hospital. Every major news organization in the country. Now, regardless of where you fall on, you know, the Israel debate, which it's amazing to me that if you could not fall on the debate, at least having it some self-awareness that, I don't know, it's not normal or acceptable for people to go into kibbutzes and massacre 1,300 women and children, and then I have to be lectured. Well, there's two sides to the story. Like, there really isn't. There's civilization and barbarism, so don't give me that two sides crap. But anyway, we can have that conversation later. But I'm sure there's some good-meaning people that agree that it's a tragedy, and you know they have differences of opinion on what's to happen there. But regardless of how you feel in that way, the media comes out and instantaneously blames Israel for what happened there. And I was like, hold on a second. Let me get this straight. Israel, that has the international community behind it, Joe Biden is flying into Israel. He doesn't know he's flying to Israel, but that's a separate issue. He doesn't know where he's going. He doesn't know. It's all the same, right? Indiana, Israel, he was this close. He was this close to saying, and the great people of Indiana, he was so close. It was really something. And so, I could go more, but I'm not going to. I'm going to be nice tonight, which is not usually what you get. So don't worry, we'll get there. So they're having the leader of the free world come in on Air Force One. They're going to go launch a rocket at a hospital? Well, that doesn't sound right. And everything about it was BS. And the point of this story that I'm about to unpack is how the media lies to you and has lied to you repeatedly. This particular story is a masterclass in how they try to manipulate you. Regardless of your passion on the Israel issue, this is worth examination. So let's go through this. Israel rocket kills 500 at Gaza hospital. So let's unpack this. First of all, Israel rocket. There's no evidence that Israel fired a rocket. In fact, it goes against any sort of rationality that would do that. But immediately the media assumed they were begging. They were yearning for an opportunity to flip the narrative. Because the narrative has been way too pro-Israel the last week and a half. So they've been just looking for any opportunity possible to try to get people angry against Israel. I said, here it is, every news outlet. And before anyone was able to ask the question, like, wait a second, hold on, 500 people dead? Like, that's a lot of people. There's protests, they're storming embassies in Lebanon, not storming embassies, but they're protesting outside of embassies. They're closing them down. The Iranian capital has a black flag. I mean, it's just, which is, in Islam, is basically an act of war. And we say, hold on a second. First of all, was it even a rocket? And thirdly, was it even an attack on a hospital? And so this morning, you know, you have some journalists in Gaza, the hospital's still standing. Now, there was an explosion in the parking lot next to the hospital. Now, the facts are still coming out, but it's very clear that a hospital was not attacked. The hospital is still intact. And so here we are. I want you to understand, you could go to a world war over this kind of media malpractice. This is not silly little stuff about, you know, did Donald Trump do something in Moscow with, you know, like this nonsense that we had to live through. You could have nuclear arsenals activated over this stuff. And they immediately take Hamas's word for it. So think about how sick the media is, right? This is a group of people that just sent terrorists to go in to kill women and children, and we're going to act like all of a sudden they're telling the truth? And so the images come out, and yes, some people obviously did die. 500 doesn't look that way. 500 is a lot of people. And by the way, if you think 500 is a lot of people, 1,300 people is even more than 500 of what happened a week and a half ago. Just have to slide that in. And so it's a blown-up parking lot. And they look at the mortar shell. It's like this. Like, was this even a rocket? Or is this like an incendiary device? We don't know the answers to these questions. But it's obvious that the media wanted you to be so angry. More importantly, they wanted Muslims in the Middle East to be so angry. And honestly, you know what the sick part of it? It worked. Joe Biden and whatever, going there, he was supposed to meet with Mahmoud Abbas and the head of Egypt. And they're like, no, we can't meet because of the hospital bombing. And this was at the very least, the most innocent explanation, a intentional intentional lying about events to try to interfere with peace. We need to think about that. This was trying to increase tensions and increase war. You have Ben Collins from NBC, who's a disinformation expert, who tweets out, he says, how dare Israel bomb a hospital? This is his job. To go after disinformation. And so we start asking questions. And you, by the way, if you want to be called every name, start asking questions. Not allowed asking questions. You get absolutely obliterated. I learned that this last week. That was a lot of fun. We'll talk about that. Can't ask questions. The media never lies to you. Sit down and obey. So obviously, naturally, I start asking questions about this hospital thing. And, the IDF comes out and they say it wasn't us. We're going to release footage and all this sort of stuff. My opinion, Israel moved too slow because they should have moved even faster and been more decisive. In fact, honestly, Israel should have just accused Hamas of doing it to themselves because that's probably what ended up happening. But we don't know that yet. But the media was quick because it goes deeper than this. And the easy explanation is, okay, there's a lot of anti-Semitism and Jewish resentment in the media. Yeah, and then that's part of it. But honestly, it's deeper than that. People hate Israel. The same reason that drives BLM is because there is resentment culture that is set into the West. And this is why BLM and Hamas have so much in common. This is why they find themselves to be partners. You have the head of Hamas come out and he says, and the racist murder of George Floyd should always be remembered. This is a guy 5,000 miles from America that's talking about George Floyd? Like, really? Like, what does that have in common? Like, why don't you feed your people? Like, stop making bombs and paying for terrorists. Like, why are you worried about George Floyd? And it's because, honestly, George Floyd is a martyr for them and has become a martyr and a symbol. It's the symbol is supposed to be, look at white America with the knee on black America. This is systemic racism. And of course, then we had Floydapalooza. We burnt down our whole country from a bitter lie, you know, burning, looting, murder. You know, obviously, yeah, you need to blow off some steam. Just go burn down a Wendy's. Yeah, totally acceptable. Fine. And we did that for a whole summer, all from this idea of systemic racism. And at the core of a lot of what Hamas is saying, if you really examine the language, it's the exact same philosophical toxin that we have been combating here. And so you think about it. Why is Gaza not rich? You say, well, because they're being blockaded. Well, that's not necessarily true. They could trade with other Arab countries, right? First of all, don't elect terrorists to run your government if you want to be rich, because they'll just spend all your money on rockets, but that's a separate issue. But at the fundamental core of it, it's because the leaders don't want to actually govern and deliver results for the poor people of Gaza. Boy, does that sound familiar. That's exactly what the leaders of Chicago and Philadelphia, New York, Seattle, and San Francisco, and Denver, and every major city in America are doing. Think about it. It's the same playbook. Because it feels like it's distant, right? Oh, wow, we don't have people like that. Well, think about it. How often do you hear politicians in this country, especially that run these urban cities, that instead of improving the lives of their citizens materially, it's always somebody else's fault? It's the threat of democracy. It's white supremacists' fault. It's like, no, how about you have roads that work? Or in Baltimore, can you find a single kid that can read at fifth grade level? They went to 17 schools. They couldn't find a single kid that could read at fifth grade level. But no, it's white supremacists' fault that that's happening. And it comes down to a zero-sum game mentality. And this is not a political statement, but it should end up instructing your politics, which is your zero-sum thinking. If you have that viewpoint, then you're going to have a rather miserable, unhappy life and a lot of bad political decisions. So let me say it this way. If you see a big home, if you see somebody with success and your immediate reaction is jealousy and envy and thinking they did something illegal or bad to get it, then you are no better than BLM or Hamas philosophically. No better. So you think about it. In Gaza and Hamas, they say, wow, the Israelis are so rich because they stole all their money because of oppression. Instead, it should be, they should be saying, again, a lot of them are indoctrinated from a young age, but their leaders should be teaching their kids, they're rich because they make good decisions. They're rich because they have values that have been proven to work. They cultivated the land, they developed businesses, they gained knowledge and plugged into the world economy. And so why doesn't Hamas or the Palestinian Authority do that? Well, it's because their leaders would actually have to take responsibility for the citizens that they are tasked to govern. They don't want to do that. They would rather stay perpetually in power than take responsibility and say, yeah, things aren't great here. Instead of saying things aren't great here, they say you are oppressed because of the distant bad guy. So this is zero sum thinking. Now, I want you to think about how sick this is. There was no escalating tensions. There was no war. Israel and Gaza, they obviously didn't like each other, but it was relatively the most serene it has been in the last couple decades. And yet Hamas made a decision, an offensive decision, to do one of, and I don't want to belabor the point too much, the worst terrorist attack that you could possibly imagine. If you haven't watched the GoPro footage, you should watch it before you have opinion either side, okay? If you think you know what actually happened there, go spend 5 minutes and watch the GoPro footage, and you realize the horror. These people, it's beyond evil or demonic. They are military-trained 20-year-old men that go door by door and isolate the women and children. They wanted to kill as many innocents as possible. That's not a military operation. That's an attempted genocide. And so they decided to bring conflict amongst themselves. So instead of saying, hey, let's try to have a prosperous society, a prosperous economy. What can we do to try to make Gaza richer? It's, oh, I know, we'll go kill Jews. I want you to think about that. Instead of saying, let's have a better value system or try to make better choices, because at the basis of it, they would rather focus on the alleged oppression than ever actually lifting up the people that they're tasked to govern. So you have a decision, right? Your decision in life is you can focus on building things and producing things or complaining about things and focusing on things you can't control. I've said this before, I'll say it again. If you produce more than you complain, you're probably a conservative. If you complain more than you produce, you're certainly a liberal. And by the way, I mean, production of all sorts of things, production of children, production of families, production of strong churches, production of safe communities, production of businesses. It's hard to produce in life. It's hard. It takes effort. It takes self-discipline. It takes restraint of your impulses. It is easy to complain. In fact, we have entire systems that are designed to weaponize your complaining, to try to use your sort of resentment or envy or whatever it might be. And by the way, all of us have it. And this is the important thing. The point is not, do you feel resentment? The point is, do you act on it and do you allow it to master you? Everybody has sinful thoughts, sinful sort of proclivities and temptations. Do you allow that to become who you are? So that when you see somebody with the nice house, do you say, oh, they must have stole it? Instead of, you should say, I wonder how many weekends they worked. I wonder how early they wake up. I wonder how many sacrifices they made if they, took out a double mortgage on their house. I wonder how many people they employed to get a house like that. I wonder how many other people they were able to give the American dream to have a house like that. It's a completely different mentality. A completely different mentality. And here's the controversial thing I have to say, is that not just being materially rich, because that's not the most important thing, but being rich in your soul, being rich in knowledge, being rich in wisdom, being rich in your walk with Christ, being rich, whatever it is a choice. And people don't like hearing that. They say, I was born poor and I must stay poor. That's not true. You can stay poor, but you can also make a series of decisions to embrace a better value system to improve your life. Hell happens to everybody. People unexpectedly die. You get sick. Things happen that you don't plan. But one of the laws of life is if you do the right thing and the hard thing over a long period of time, your life will improve. If you tell the truth, if you stop drinking, if you stop watching porn, if you get married before you have kids, if you have a job, any job, if you try to find a problem and solve the problem, your life will improve. But yet the whole culture tells you the opposite. They say it's racism's fault that you can't succeed. It's white supremacy's fault that you can't succeed. It's like, I'm sorry, hold on. Like, I will listen to your white supremacy, like, nonsense when all of a sudden, I don't know, in the black community, that we have more than 25% of black kids being raised by a mom and a dad. 25% of black kids in America are raised by a mom and dad. 75% are raised without a father in the home. That's a much bigger problem than white supremacy in America. Much bigger problem. And so what I'm getting at is that what Israel decided to do, largely because they're a people of the law and God's law will yield productive results. If you just take the Ten Commandments, you will succeed in life. Just the Ten Commandments. If you honor your mother and father, you work for 6 days and keep the Sabbath day holy. If you tell the truth, if you don't murder, good one to remember, do not steal. And by the way, do not steal is basically, a lot of the other commandments can be drawn back to stealing, if you think about it. Murdering, you're stealing somebody's wife. Coveting, you're stealing somebody. Theft is actually a central part of the Ten Commandments that gets repeated in other ways. If you just do that, you will be blessed. You just do that. But guess what? If you embrace what Hamas or Gaza embraces, which is no matter how hard you work, you can't succeed because of the Jews over there. No matter what you do, you can't break out of this. No matter what you do, you're destined. You might as well just be a terrorist. In fact, they tell them that your way out of this is to go take a rifle and eventually go to a kibbutz. And they've programmed to it. What I'm getting at is the very same thing that feels distant, Israel, Hamas, is actually here in this country right now. It's the same philosophy. Because we tell so many of our nation's young people, there's no way that you can get ahead. It's the white person's fault. It's the white man's fault. And yes, there's a lot of problems in this country. I mean, we could talk about them forever, but it's still the greatest country in the world, period. It is still the greatest country. And if you make tonight as a young, the sooner you commit to a series of good choices, you have to first acknowledge that it's hard. But then you'll realize that your life gets better. And when you understand that it does not take talent at all to compete in the oppression Olympics, it doesn't. Well, Charlie, I'm a person of color and, you know, lesbian, bisexual, whatever. And because of that, I'm super oppressed and people are rigged against me. That doesn't take talent to, like, compete in the oppression Olympics at all. By the way, every single person can get up on stage and could share something terrible that's happened to them. Every single person. Every person. Difficulty is a human universal. Universal. And my heart goes out for you. More importantly, God is there to help you through that. Since it's a human universal. However, what is exceptional, this is important, what is not universal is the human species to be able to not dwell on the suffering. That is not universal. What is not universal is to build a culture. That's why America's so great. That is built on, we understand you've had it hard. Why don't you have a better tomorrow? And that requires de-emphasizing the difficulty and prioritizing your own human agency. And tomorrow, if Hamas embraced this mindset, tomorrow, all of a sudden you would see a de-escalation of tensions. If God, Hamas is a terrorist group, but what, the Palestinian Authority, whatever you call it. And at the fundamental root of so much of this, which is what I think is missing in this country, is a disempowerment message. And this is what drives me crazy about the affirmative action stuff, about hiring quotas, about white privilege, is that it's basically telling black people or people of color that you are too stupid, not well equipped enough to be able to succeed in America, and you might as well not try. I think that it is insulting to every person in the country, regardless of skin color, to say that we need to reconfigure our laws and our hiring practices so much because you otherwise would not be able to succeed on your own. In fact, I think what it does is it creates, as Clarence Thomas says, the soft bigotry of low expectations. And I'll just use one example of this, which I think is the most repulsive, which is the idea of voter ID. Every time we should have voter ID anytime someone votes. The fact this is even a question is remarkable to me. But they say, well, black people can't get access to a voter ID. And I say, I hope I don't even have a bigoted thought as racist as what you just said to say that black people don't have access to an ID. But they say, well, we can't do it because, you know, people of color can't find IDs. Well, that's literally their argument that they make in court. And judges put up with it. Instead, it should be, yeah, we're not going to pander down to the lowest, you know, one-liner narrative. Any person in the country have IDs. In fact, if you can't, then, you know, prove it, honestly. And so this kind of mindset shift is so important. You can call it victor versus victim. You can call it whatever you want. But it plays out time and time again. Think about all the different narratives that have happened here, right? You have the BLM. You have the trans narrative. You have all these different things. And they're trying to create two groups of people, oppressor and oppressed, oppressor and oppressed. And typically the people at the top of the oppression ladder, it's like white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant, heterosexual male. So I'm like the, you know, the chief villain, right? And conservative, oh my goodness, outspoken, geez, married with kids, total, you know, take them out, right, at the top. And instead of viewing people through, are you in the oppression group or the oppressed group, why don't we say, are you a good person? Are you doing good for your country? Are you filled with gratitude? And that's the final thing I'll say is this. Why does Israel succeed and all the other neighboring countries or the PA, you know, they fail. You say, oh, it's black aids and all this. No, it's a value system. And the one thing I know that Jews do, because they're forced to do it, is that they say thank you. Gratitude. If you are thankful for the life that you have and the blessings in front of you, you will live a happier, deeper, and more productive life. It is a guarantee in life. And it is not easy. We are wired to be anything but grateful. God's chosen people, the Hebrews, come out of Egypt, and they are a largely unimpressive people according to the scriptures. They complain all the time. They're unbelievably ungrateful, and they have to be reminded time and time again. And through now, Jewish prayers and Jewish customs, saying thank you is a big deal in Judaism. So I want you to just think about this in the next couple of days. When you see the savagery and the barbarism and the poverty that they've inflicted upon themselves in Gaza with Hamas, and the wealth and the civilization built out of nothing, where they literally made deserts bloom in Israel, who has a mindset that is rooted more in gratitude or ingratitude? Not saying one is perfect and one is not. There's plenty of problems with the Israeli government. I'm not an apologist for it. But more than not, those people say, thank you, God. In fact, they say it every Friday night on the Shabbat. Thank you, God, for creating the heavens and the earth. I don't get that sense that Hamas is saying, you know what, thank you. Instead, let us wage war. It's a big difference. And then you look here in this country. Who says thank you or has more gratitude? People that think America is the greatest nation ever to exist in the history of the world, that we've been given to a gift by God, or people that think that America is misogynistic, racist, homophobic, or terrible? It's easy to complain. It takes effort and intentionality to live with gratitude. Why do we have the most suicidal, alcohol-addicted, drug-addicted, depressed generation in history? A lot of reasons. One of the reasons is that we have told a generation to be ungrateful despite the fact that they live in the best place ever. And it takes effort. And then you finally have the most important question. If you then have gratitude, who are you grateful to? And there's only one right answer to that. You can be grateful to your parents. That's true. Honor your parents. But most importantly, there's something bigger and above you. And if there's one thing I can leave with you, then we'll do questions, is that if you accept these two truths, your life will improve. There is a God, and I am not him. Those two things will make your life a lot better. Let's do some questions. Okay, we're going to take some questions. If you disagree, come to the front of the line. Let me just say one thing about this. First of all, thank you, guys. Obviously, a very friendly audience. It's important. And thank you, guys, for driving all the way. Who watches the Charlie Kirk Show? Thank you, guys. Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you, guys. Really blesses us. All right, listen. We invite disagreement. If and when somebody comes up and says something you don't like, that you think is a little silly, do not boo them. Do not make fun of them. Let them make their peace. Say their part. We're going to give liberals the respect that we conservatives never get at events like this. Okay? All right.
Hey, Charlie. First, I'd like to say congratulations on being a new father.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
So, for a young man like myself that hopes to be a father one day, what advice do you have for me and others like me on fatherhood?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, first of all, you have to date with the intent to marry. That's the number one thing. Dating recreationally, I think, is one of the great tragedies of the modern era. I really do. Thank you so much. I was going to go get that. So that's number one. Number two is that if you want to find a life partner, make yourself available, obviously, but make yourself interesting. And here's the thing. Some people say, but Charlie, I'm not, you know, born with the best looks and all that. I say, listen, whatever. That's you're focusing on the wrong things. You can focus on how interesting you are. How many books are you reading? Podcasts are you listening to? Those things you can control. And, you know, a young lady will find it attractive for a young man that takes learning very seriously. Yeah. And in fact, am I right? Second thing, the number one feedback, because I it's like the Charlie Kirk show has become like this dating thing. It's really weird, right? I get the cat people. I get out from all over the place, right? So the number one piece of feedback I get from young women is that the young men are actually grown boys that can't control themselves. And they don't have self-discipline, and they don't have self-control. And so it is not attractive to a young woman if a young boy or a young man drinks to endless limits. I don't think you should drink at all, honestly. You could disagree on that. But if you actually want to make yourself attractive, embrace sobriety. You'll find a woman very, very quickly, okay? And honestly, you know, embrace other parts of sobriety too. Don't watch pornography, all that stuff. And then finally, don't be afraid to be assertive in the best possible masculine way, right? Don't be a jerk, but I was just sitting, you know, yesterday I met a couple Turning Point USA chapter leaders, and they're like, yeah, you know, we can't find a man. And I said, what do you wish they would do? And I said, I wish they would actually ask me out on a date and stop being like beta males to be friends for 6 months. Interesting feedback. God bless you, man. Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. As you probably know, one of the newest memes circulating the internet is about women being drafted for war.
Yeah.
It does make for some really good laughs, but what's your take?
Yeah, I don't think women should be drafted for the war. In fact, I have a controversial position that, look, if women really want to serve in the U.S. military, that's fine. I've never been a fan of women in active combat roles. I receive a lot of negativity. I think fighting is a masculine and a male role. And the reason is I believe firmly in the traditional separation of the sexes. And I'm a traditionalist with this. And I'm not saying that certain women are not stone cold killers. I'm not saying that they can't be. No, seriously. That's not the position. But this is where it ends. The fact that I might one day have to draft my daughter is the next logical step in us opening up the U.S. military in combat roles in ways that I'm afraid we never should have. And again, I'm not diminishing the service or the sacrifice of females that have served in the military. I'm not even saying that they might be doing an amazing job right now. But I think it would be wrong and it would be morally unacceptable to tell young women that you now have to be drafted into a conflict and a war. I think that is blurring what I think is the beautiful separation of God made man and God made female. And this is the fact, is that men are more likely in a combat type situation through higher testosterone rates, you know, whether it be greater muscle mass, to be able to endure those hellish environments. I'm not saying that women can't, but look, let me just put it, those memes going around are pretty accurate of, I'll just leave it with that. So, but honestly, this is a big question, right? And where do you think the root of some of this trans ideology comes from? Is that everything men can do, women can do, and everything women can do, men can do. And that's not true. It's not saying that there aren't exceptions. So I'm a traditionalist in that regard, and I stand on it. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Hello. So to preface, I'm a progressive, and I would like to have some discourse with you over the Israel-Palestine conflict. I'm just going to say I fully condemn Hamas, and my current position is that there should be a one-state solution where it's anti-apartheid. However, there should be the international community with the United Nations should be responsible for leading the peace process. And personally, I think the Hamas and the Israeli government are essentially two sides of the same coin. So.
You were doing so well.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
I'm not good with public speaking.
No. I just mean the points. The speaking is fine. Yeah.
Okay.
So I
think with the recent conflict, of course, what Hamas did was terrible. However, I think it's very important to understand the context of why they did it. They're very radical, and that radicalization has essentially formed from the Israeli government bullying the Gaza Strip for the past 50 years and obstructing their freedoms.
Okay. Let me just ask. So Thank you for condemning the attacks. I wish we had every member of Congress that could do that. However, let's just make sure we have our, you know, stuff clear. You say the Israeli government and Hamas are the same side of a coin, right?
Maybe there's some differences, yes, but
okay. Yeah, well, the differences are pretty big. So let me just go through the last 2 weeks, and I want you to just at least acknowledge it or not acknowledge it. Hamas gave no warning before they slaughtered 1,300 women and children. Israel did multiple days of warnings and dropping leaflets before they dropped any bombs on civilian corridors. Is that moral equivalency?
Well, I think Hamas is much worse.
Okay, good. So they're not the same coin. Got it. So because you
maybe
said they're
similar coins, maybe the penny and the nickel.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's go to the next question. Let's go to the next kind of.
Well, okay.
Element.
So as I said earlier, I think the international community should get more involved. A while ago, I read the book "Palestinian Peace, Not Apartheid" by President Jimmy Carter, and the book essentially boils down to. The book essentially boils down to three things. The Israel country and its borders should be respected. I agree. Palestinians and Jews should coexist peacefully. And they shouldn't be killed, which is the third thing.
Okay. So let me just add, I want to try to get this along to some sort of clarity, if not agreement. Who's a bigger impediment to peace, Israel or Hamas?
I think the biggest impediment is the reactionary politics and reactions between the two groups. Hamas had been radicalized by the Jews, or rather the Israel government, which had been radicalized by the history of Arabs killing Jews.
I got to cut you off, man. Wait, what? Like you said Hamas is radicalized by the Israeli government.
Well,
they're radicalized by Islam, not by the Israeli government. Islam is what radicalized Hamas. Not everything goes back to the Jews, man, right? Like,
well, no. I'm sorry. So the conflict essentially boils down to its history. The Arabs killed a bunch of Jews in its history. The Jews killed a bunch of, or through the Zionist movement, through colonialism. And,
I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I just want to ask one final question. Is if Hamas would lay down all of the, before this massacre, okay, would have laid down all of their weapons, what do you think would have happened? And if Israel laid down all of their weapons, what do you think would happen?
So I'll address the second part. If Israel lays down all its weapons, I think terrorist groups such as Hamas and the Palestinian Authority would use this opportunity to kill a bunch of Israelis.
I agree. So we have clarity on that. So, great. Before the massacre, because heightened tensions, if Hamas would have laid down their weapons and Gaza would have laid down their weapons, what do you think would have happened?
I think the Israel government would try to essentially do something similar, or they would try to push out all of the Palestinians.
We would have freedom movement. So we're not going to agree on this. Let me just make a couple points. Israel, time and time again, has sat down for peace. Abraham Accords, Oslo Accords, Camp David Accords, which was facilitated. At every corner, Israel has given up land, Sinai Peninsula, parts of the West Bank, parts of Judea and Samaria, in the pursuit of peace. And I just encourage you. And you've been intellectually honest, but I want you to think about this, and anyone who might agree with you, that these are not morally equivalent. You have one side that has a democratically elected government that allows pluralism in the Knesset, Arab, Judaism. In Gaza, they are one size fits all. Hamas took over power, was voted into power, and the stated doctrine of Hamas is no morally different than Nazism. It's not an exaggeration. It's not about land. It's not about winning hearts or souls. It's about killing Jews. And the issue is this. Well, more than the issue, is that Hamas now invited this conflict. Okay? And this is where my sympathy kind of wanes down to little next to nothing, is that there was at least some form of an equilibrium. They were in Gaza, Israel is in Israel, and on a holy day in the 50-year anniversary of the Yom Kippur War, they decided to go into kibbutzes, which I know that you denounce. But at that point, they're going to F around and find out, and Hamas should be obliterated for that action. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. So just recently, there's been a lot of talk about like migrant resettlements in places like New York and how they're being overrun. And I've seen a lot of mainstream conservatives and Republicans kind of use this as like a gotcha moment against Democrats. And so I'm just kind of wondering, why are we like playing those games? Like, meanwhile, like the top 20 whitest states, of those top 20, 15 of them are among the top 20 with the highest rate of refugee resettlements. And mind you, these are communities that are very closely knit. These are small cities, rural areas that lack resources. They have a strong culture. So it really looks like this doesn't benefit either party. So I'm wondering, why is this happening? Do you think these communities are being targeted? And if so, why aren't you talking about it?
Well, I only have 90 minutes here. But I'm not going to get into intentions. I don't know the intention. You might be right. You might be wrong. But it's a fact what you are saying is that we're importing the third world. Let me use one example that I do talk about a lot, especially the last week and a half. It has been bad for the country that we have brought in hundreds of thousands of refugees from Somalia. It's been bad for the country. It is bad for the country that Ilhan Omar is a member of Congress. It is bad for the country. And that is an extension of refugee resettlement program. If you have visited Minneapolis recently, it is an unrecognizable captured city. It is mini Mogadishu. And Ilhan Omar, who was rescued by Americans in a Kenyan refugee camp, brought into the country, given a great life, runs for Congress, and then tells us how systemically racist we are, how terrible and how awful we are. And so, look, why they are doing it, it's speculation at some point. But you and I could agree on the reality of the policy. We should not take a single person from Gaza into the United States of America, period, hard stop. It is not our problem. Hold on. In fact, we have so many people coming into this flipping country right now, we should just shut it all down. We need a cooling off period, nobody coming in. It is like eating one massive meal after the other and acting as if that, well, they're going to assimilate. I am not seeing evidence that the Somali community is assimilating. I get attacked as being racist and misogynistic and all these different things, especially the racist and the, you know, xenophobic is the word I'm looking for. It's about love of the nation. If you bring people into the country that resent you, don't share your culture, and they do not want to learn your language, and they do not assimilate, you should probably stop bringing those people into your country. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, Charlie. I know it's a little bit of last week's news, it feels like, but I wanted to ask about Ukraine versus Russia. It seems to be the case that a lot of conservatives have like either a couple different options for what they say for Russia. I think, if I'm not mistaken, yours is just that the U.S. should not be involved. Do you have any opinion on like the morality of like what's going on in Russia? Like, should Russia be attacking in the first place? And I can go from there.
No, Russia should not have invaded, but the United States involvement should be actively trying to broker peace. And our leaders are trying to broker war. And my big picture is two things. I've been through this so many times, so I'll just do it really quick. Number one, I don't think it's smart or wise to unnecessarily antagonize Russia. It's stupid, actually. Donald Trump handled it perfectly. He was firm, he was tough, but he had dialogue with Vladimir Putin and isolated Russia from China. That's number one. But number two, it's a bigger thing, right? Which is the intensity, the passion, and the zeal that members in both parties of Congress have to go spend hundreds of billions of dollars for a foreign war while we are being invaded is morally reprehensible. It is morally reprehensible while our border is being overrun. And people say, well, Charlie, it's two different things. It's not two different things. You know why? When Senator Mitch McConnell goes up and he says the most important thing in the world is what's happening in Ukraine and Russia. Don't give me it's two separate things. He is ranking and prioritizing in a hierarchy that a foreign border dispute is more important than our own border, where you guys know here in Texas what is happening. From the drugs and the sex trafficking and the guns and the cartels. And so I think we should try to broker peace. And what does that look like? Both sides are going to have to give. Eastern Ukraine speaks Russian. They want to be part of Russia. They, you know, there's very few Ukrainians
I'm pretty
there.
Sorry.
Yeah, good.
I could be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure that if you're talking about like the Donbass and that area,
all the way up to Mariupol, basically.
Many of those areas, from what I know, do not support being a part of Russia. A lot of the elections that have happened in those areas have been hotly contested by, it seems like, different international groups have said, like, these elections are not fair, and that it's probably not true.
I got to pause you. It's hilarious that the international organizations can tell us that those elections are not fair, but our elections are perfectly safe and effective. I know that's not your point. No, that's a cheap shot. I just couldn't resist. I'm sorry. That's not about you.
My question is not about the election. My question is obviously.
I know. That's why I said what I said. I just couldn't resist. It's just hilarious. The UN, it's not. But hey, Joe Biden totally got 81 million votes. Like, yeah, okay, great. Anyway, no. But look, you might be right. You might be wrong. They do speak Russian. They're ethnically Russian. And both sides have to give, okay? The war is brutal. Tons of people are dying. It needs to get to a place where some sort of a peace settlement is brokered. The best interest of the United States is finally not losing the dollars of world reserve currency status, interrupting BRICS. The rise of BRICS is a major threat to American strength. And finally, I, for one, do not trust the intel agencies or the war machine in Washington, D.C. that is making billions of dollars off of the suffering of people 5,000 miles away. I find that to be awful. And so we need to act as a way to broker peace. Both sides have to have concessions. Peace in this situation means that Russia will probably increase their landmass and Ukraine will decrease their landmass. The American government wants nothing to do with that. Final thought. Yeah.
So it seems to be the case that I don't believe that Russia is a good actor.
I didn't say they were a good actor. But they are necessary if you want to beat the Tricons.
I'm not saying that you are saying that. What I'm saying, though, is that I don't see it stopping by us brokering peace between these two countries.
Let me ask you one question. Did Russia invade at all when Trump was president?
Trump's not president right now.
Hold on. No, I know. But why? No, this is important. But then why? Obama, they take Crimea. Biden, they take eastern Ukraine. Why is it the guy that was called the Russian Putin puppet, they didn't invade? I'm just curious.
Because that person was doing their bidding?
Well, hold on.
Wouldn't that make sense if they were doing the bidding, then
they would have took all of Ukraine, right? So, no, because Trump was unpredictable, America first, and he was able to upend the old foreign policy playbook of Langley, Virginia, and D.C., which is that, look, we're going to be firm but fair, tough, unpredictable. He sat in a meeting with Vladimir Putin, and he said, oh, nice Kremlin you got there. It'd be a shame if a missile hit it. And Putin was like, this guy's a psychopath. But the point is this. The point is you're incorrect by acting as if Putin is always going to invade. 4 years of Donald Trump shows us that a strong America at home, when we're energy independent, our dollar is strong, we fix our trade deals, we have a great economy, is a way to prevent Russian aggression. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you. Sorry, I just got to keep going through the line. Thank you. Appreciate it.
So speaking of America first, I have to point out that you spent half your speech talking about a foreign country thousands of miles away, which brings me to my question. Last year, Turning Point USA hosted the Young Jewish Leadership Summit, during which you said, so a Christian that's not pro-Israel, I doubt they actually love their Bible. And I will stand by that statement. If you are a Christian that doesn't love Israel, then you take your Bible way, way, way too much for granted, end quote. So who are you to question the faith of Christian Americans that don't support a foreign country of a different religion that has spied on us, attacked us, and lied to us, like about WMDs in Iraq? And especially given your recent suggestion that Israel allowed the recent Hamas attacks to happen, why would you support a country that would do that? And do you still stand by your statement like you said you would?
No, I definitely stand by the statement. So I'm not an apologist for the Israeli government, but let me ask you, what religion was Jesus? What did he believe?
Well, obviously he's Jew, but modern-day Judaism is
Hold on, hold on.
Really...
Time out. No, hold on. Where was Jesus born?
Well, somebody say he was the first Christian.
Well, hold on. Time out. Well, where was Jesus born?
Why does that matter?
Well, do you know?
Why does it matter?
Okay, yeah, you're obviously not a Christian if you don't know where Jesus was born. He's born in Bethlehem, okay.
In Judea.
So, And he was raised in Nazareth, and yeah. he walked on the water in Capernaum. What country are those places in right now?
What does it matter?
It does matter. You know why? Because when I went to Israel, I came in contact with a living God that walked on water and rose Lazarus from the dead. When I went to Israel, I saw the Bible come to life. When I went to Israel, I saw Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Sarah, Rebecca, and Leah in the Hall of the Patriarchs. When I went to Israel, what I read as Bible stories popped open. And I said, this is the word of God. This is real. These are not fairy tales or fables or things that we tell our kids. When I went to Israel, I was able to cry where Jesus cried. Where he was betrayed by Judas and arrested. Where he rose from the dead and gives us eternal life. I am not an apologist for Israel, but I reject wholeheartedly this narrative. Christians who turn their back on Israel, it says in Genesis and Romans and 1 Thessalonians, Paul said, you will bless the Jews. If you bless Israel, you will be blessed. If you scorn Israel, you will be scorned. The Israeli government, plenty of suspicious things going on. How do we know the Bible is true? Every day there are archaeological discoveries that confirm the truths of the Bible in 1 Samuel, in 1 Kings, in 1 Chronicles. There is a diabolical, satanic agenda every single day to try and delegitimize the scriptures. And I will defend the Holy Land, the place that let me see where my Lord and Savior lived. And I will not apologize for that. Thank you very much. Next question. Thank you.
So, sorry. Hi, Charlie. So,
I get it from both sides. Some people say, Charlie, you're too pro-Israel, or Charlie, you're a Jew hater. No, I'm just a Christian who loves the Bible. I'm just a Christian who loves the Bible. All right.
So, I grew up, right, not particularly liking the LGBT community, and in the past several years I have turned to believe that I really like the LGBT community today, and I was going to ask you about a specific person in that community, Ms. Blair White.
Haven't thought about Blair White in a while, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, she was on the new Jubilee debate.
Wait, is it a biological woman who thinks they're a man? I can't remember.
She's a trans woman.
Okay, so a fake woman.
So,
no, I'm just trying. I'm not even being sarcastic. I don't. So it's a man who masquerades as a woman.
Masquerading as a woman? That if you were, I mean, there was a debate she had with Ben Shapiro. If you were to refer to her at a restaurant or whatever, you would refer to her as a woman, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could pretend to be black. You could put blackface on. That doesn't make you black. But I'm just wondering, I don't know much about Blair White. So it's a man who wears the costume of a woman. Is that right?
I mean, if you believe that value system, then
let me ask you, what is a woman?
I watched the movie, and it's a person who needs a man to open their pickle jar.
Oh. So you.
I do open my girlfriend's pickle jar.
I can't hear what you said.
I do open my girlfriend's pickle jars for her.
Still can't hear what you said.
I open my girlfriend's pickle jars for her, I swear.
Tough guy. It's a tough guy here. So you can't answer what a woman is.
That's not what I said. I did answer what a woman was.
Yeah, I mean, rather, so that's your final answer? It's like, who wants to be a millionaire? That's your final answer? That's
what a woman is? My final answer. So, obviously the Bible says that a woman is a woman, a person with a vagina, obviously. But I do believe that gender dysphoria is a real thing and scientifically proven, right?
Well, no, it's definitely a mental delusion. The question is it what they think they are? Is it what they are?
Delusion's a strong word. Disorder, sure. But a person with a woman's soul and a man's body is a real thing.
Okay, say that one more time.
A trans woman is a person with a woman's soul and a man's body.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you're willing to appropriate the word woman. Well, I guess it does fit your definition because it's a man who could open a pickle jar. So that's kind of, I guess it fits your definition. So then you think so lowly of women that you think that someone can just look like one, put on a bra with a dress and makeup, and that magically they enter womanhood.
Well, if they have gender dysphoria, then yes. And I don't think lowly of women. I love them.
Gender dysphoria is a real thing people suffer from.
Right.
But the thing they claim is not real or true.
Why?
Because there's no evidence for it.
For example, say that again.
So, can you pick your adjectives?
Say that one more time.
Can you pick your adjectives in life?
I mean, obviously not, right? I'm not okay, going so to force my friends to tell me.
If you can't pick your adjectives, why can you pick your pronouns?
Pronouns are a social construct.
You gotta do it one more time.
Pronouns are just, like, when you look at a person, you say, hey, this person looks like a man, right? Like the person you, the other person, I forgot, was it Joe Bob? I forgot their name.
Sure.
But he looked at, I think her name was Chloe. This person looks like a woman. She's a woman, right?
Yes.
If a trans woman looks like a woman, you're gonna call her a woman on first sight because she looks like a woman.
Yes, you might incorrectly label somebody that's trying to trick you.
Tricky.
Because they are wearing the equivalent of a Halloween costume because they're suffering from a mental disorder.
I do believe that they are suffering, and I do believe that
No, they are suffering, but let me tell you.
Yeah.
Instead of pandering to somebody's torture, we should give them a way out and liberate them with the truth and say that there is a better way forward for you where you don't have to chop off your genitals, get on Lupron,
get a mastectomy. Wait, I didn't hear you. There was a crowd. Can you repeat that?
Say that?
Can you repeat? You're rambling, and there was a crowd, so I couldn't
hear
you.
Oh, I was rambling. Okay. All right, next question. We're done.
No. I couldn't hear you.
No, if you're going to be a jerk, we're done. Next question. Yeah, thanks. And by the way, you don't get to pick your adjectives. You aren't very tall, and you can't change that. So next question.
Right here? All right, testing. All right. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Good evening, Mr. Kirk. My question is on Trump and policy.
Okay.
So my question for you is, how can we rely on Trump to be the leader of the Republican Party if we are expecting to be the one that – if we expect to nominate Trump to lead the Republican Party for 2024, how can we expect him to do this successfully and truly understand the values of the Republican Party – based off of what he did in the latter half of his first term? What I'm referring to is Operation Warp Speed, in which he championed the development of the vaccine, after which he gave Dr. Fauci an award, a person in which I would assume most of us in this room have a lot of hatred for because of the lockdowns that he caused.
He should be in Gitmo. Yeah, I agree. So
Donald Trump gave this man an award and commemorated him and called the vaccine a, quote, miracle of the ages. In addition to this, Trump urged and signed multiple stimulus checks throughout December in 2020. Another thing which I can assume most of us would agree that when the government spends, it's usually not successful and it's just taking more of our money through taxes. However, Trump was the one signing these stimulus checks and making inflation worse by spending more government money. So if he was able to fold so easily to Democrat policy, how can we trust that he won't do this again if another situation arises in 2024?
Okay. Glad you got that out of your system. So I just want to make sure I understand where you're going from. Who is a better president, or is Biden or Trump? Which one would you rank higher?
The question has nothing to do with.
No, I just want to know where you're coming from, though, because it's super important.
Oh, where it's coming from? So, in terms of policy, I think that Trump is superior to Biden.
Okay, good. I agree. So, I totally agree. Operation Warp Seed was a mistake, and giving Fauci an award was a big mistake. I am more than willing to say, you know what? No leader is perfect. No leader is going to do everything the right way, but he was a president that most enraged the establishment, that went to war against the deep state. Now, understand that some of you have been ahead of the curve on this stuff, but the built-in expectation that a vaccine is safe and effective is normative amongst a lot of people over the last 30 or 40 years. He comes in thinking he's going to do this thing. It's going to be great. Anything but that, right? And we could talk about that at great length. But we also must be very clear about the history, because I think you're whitewashing it a little bit. Trump's gut instinct, which I wish you would have stuck with, was early treatments, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and opening up the economy. Now, to your point, he was somewhat overwhelmed by committee and Birx and Fauci. But you remember when Trump did that press conference, said, we must open up the country and we must do this and we must do that. and he got totally assaulted and land blasted from every single direction. So your question is, how can we think he's going to be a good... He was already a great president. I mean, I will give him one thing that I don't love what he did. While we had no new wars, the best economy ever, we had a secure border, we had Amy Coney Barrett, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and over 100 circuit court judges. I acknowledged during COVID that cooler heads did not prevail and he had bad people around him. But here's why I support him even more. Again, I'm speaking personally, not on behalf of Turning Point USA, just personally. Let me tell you why, okay? Which is the amount that they are trying to put him on the sidelines, 700 years in federal prison, makes me believe firmly that he's onto something and that he's going to do something if he gets a second term that will make the deep state go running. So, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hello, Mr. Kirk. I'm not sure how I can follow that up, but I'm going to do my best. My question really has to deal with abortion. And I never really heard you talk about this on YouTube Shorts. That's how I really kind of like know you. But what's your stance on a woman that is pregnant and her life is endangered due to the fetus? Because I believe here in the state of Texas, you have your, you can stand your ground. You have the right to self-defense. Mm-hmm. What is your stance on that?
Okay, so first of all, this is debated. I have a really fun, good pro-life leader here. So first of all, I'm 100% pro-life across the board, okay? And in if there is actually, and I will just go to Lila Rose on this. She's much more of an expert than I am. She believes, so does Seth Gruber and many other people in the pro-life, that there are not actual ever instances where the woman's life is in danger or jeopardy. I'm not an OBGYN. Here's what I will say, is that if truly a cesarean section, if truly a C-section can't save the baby and the life of the mother, then in traditional religious doctrine, it's okay to save the life of the mother, okay? But I would dive deeper into what Lila Rose and Seth Gruber say. They believe, and they have a whole community of OBGYNs that believe there's no such circumstance that would necessitate killing the baby to save the mom without engaging in a C-section in that regard. I don't know enough about the details of that to die on that hill, so I would look after them. But out of principle, I would do everything I possibly could to save both lives, out of principle.
As would I. Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Kirk, I have one question, or rather a request.
Sure.
What could you throw out some solutions that would limit or stop men's suicide?
Before you fulfill
my request, I would like to put the magnitude on this problem. In 2020, there were 46,000 suicides in the United States. That is 125 deaths a day, or 125 deaths a day, 5 deaths every hour. Mm-hmm. 4 of those 5 deaths were men. We make up 49% of the population, yet 80% of the suicides.
Okay, first of all, I've really come to like a doctor. I've had him on my podcast a couple times, Dr. Daniel Amen. I encourage you guys to check him out. He's one of the few guys that talks about brain health and how your brain is the only organ that we don't look at before we treat. You do it with your heart, you do it with your kidney, you do it with your liver, with your appendix. You think about it, brain damage is a very serious thing. So I encourage you guys to check it out. I'm not an expert in it. He has been doing this for 30 or 40 years, and he's really big on this. Brain health leads to mental health, right? From diet to all these different things. Let's talk about policy. Number one, why are men killing themselves in record numbers? There is a lack of purpose in young men, and there's an outright war on men in this country, and it has to stop. There is a war on men in this country that... Men are aimless and they are treated as second-class citizens. They lack purpose. They lack the ability to be men at a very young age. They have to almost be grown into like feminized versions of their former self. And all the institutions have become super, super feminized. Now, I'm willing to look at all sorts of different sort of policy prescriptions, including, you know, I don't think that pornography is helping at all. I think that men staring at screens is directly tied to depression and anxiety and the lack of young boys to be able to actually have healthy dopaminergic responses to pleasure and to seeking reward systems. But even beyond that, right, this is such a major crisis that is being completely unaddressed by our society and our culture. And if any one of you are struggling with that, you need to go find help. It's okay to go find help. You should go find help. And I hope and pray you find hope, find help that does not just try to medicate you, but actually talks to you and reorients your ability to find purpose and meaning, not just puts you on benzodiazepines or Xanax or Prozac. That is my hope. I'm not an expert, but it's a major problem. Thank you. God bless you. Thank you.
Hello, Charlie. I just had to thank you really quickly. I know a few years back you and Candace did a campus tour. I think it was Campus Clash or something like that. You went to Texas State University. I brought my wife along. At the time, she wasn't really sure where she stood politically, right? She probably couldn't even tell you the difference between a Republican and Democrat at the moment. But I told her, let's go check these people out. She goes, okay, whatever. And she came, and she ended up loving everything she heard, and really ever since then, she's basically been converted to the conservative movement.
Hey,
so
there
thank
you,
go. You so much. Okay, so I couldn't pass up that chance just to thank you for that. But I do have a question. On your general stance on college, it's not really just you. I think it's
yep.
generally what I hear from conservatives is that it's kind of just a waste of money. Being a college student, maybe I'm slightly biased. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I wanted to question you on, like, I feel like I believe there are smart, practical ways to approach college, even though, unfortunately, too many take way too much debt for a useless degree. So I definitely understand the
yep.
concern. But do you think there's a better way that we just kind of as a movement can kind of educate on that? Or do you think college is sort of just a lost cause?
I mean, it depends. Point? I mean, I'm not exactly kind to college. I wrote a whole book called The College Scam, right? And by the way, after you see Harvard with 31 student organizations coming out and supporting Hamas, I think that my hypothesis on college being a scam is being proven right. Look, I bet if I were to ask you, are there classes that you take that you think are completely unnecessary that you have to go into debt for? I'm sure if I went around the room, everyone says yes, 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 right? And so if they were actually developing your character and enriching your soul, I would say all for it, right? But we're having a massive problem. I mean, I could go through the numbers. They're shocking. Majority of kids that enter – I mean, 40% of kids that enter college don't graduate. How many of you know people that dropped out of college? Almost every single hand goes up, right? There's way too many people that go into college – right? And we need more plumbers, electricians, and welders, and HVAC, and police officers, and entrepreneurs, and people that work at their hands. We need way more of them, right? But secondly, is that everyone's path is different, so I don't want to overly generalize, right? If you want to become a nurse or a doctor, obviously you need to go to college. But if you're going to college to study North African lesbian poetry, like, you should probably press pause on that, right? And not exactly a great, you know, career, you just go work at Starbucks, I guess, or whatever. So, and by the way, for the record, North African straight poetry is not that great either, just for the record. But that's a separate issue. And so I just want to say my job is this. My job is for parents that have high school kids and high school kids to give them the permission to not go to college if they know that's what's right for them without the weight or the scorn or the condemnation. Because I was that kid. I was that kid. And it has followed me still recently in my career, where I am treated as dumb, stupid. You don't know what you're doing. Even in news articles this day, Charlie Kirk, who never went to college, they're really just trying to say I'm stupid, right? And that's fine. They could say it. But it is a deeply unhealthy way to organize society. That because you get a special piece of paper, you're somehow like on a higher plane morally or otherwise. And that's why I wrote the book. And so my job is for the entrepreneur that's 17 years old right now in San Antonio, and he thinks that college is not for him, to say, you know what, you might be right. It's better to go start the business and take the risk, because you always go back to college, than go to college and not start the business and take the risk. The final thing is the most important thing we should be focused on is developing good people. And I'm afraid that college does not do a good job of that. Thank you, man. God bless you.
Hi, Charlie. I have a two-part question. Who are God's chosen people?
According to Genesis 3:15, we would traditionally know them as the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
So
yeah,
Abraham,
from Genesis 12 onwards. Yeah.
Of course.
But in the Old Testament context. But yeah, then it goes on to talk about elect and other in the New Testament context.
Yes, of course. So Abraham's seed.
Not all of Abraham's seed.
Okay.
Yeah, because Ishmael, I don't think, is God's chosen people. So.
Okay. So according to the Old Testament, yes. But what are your thoughts on Galatians 3:29, which states, "And if you are Christ's, then you are Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise," as well as Romans 2:28-29, that states, "For he is not a Jew, which is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision, which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew, which is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, and not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God."
Okay, so I'm not a theologian or a pastor, but I think what Paul is saying there in Romans, which is basically the believer's constitution, is that if you accept Christ, you're in God's family. That God's family, the new covenant, accepts all if you accept Jesus into the heart, right? So before, it was a very direct bloodline. You call it a tribe of Israel, right? The tribe of God's chosen people who struggle with God. And I think what he's saying there, and I could be wrong based on the verses you selected, is that accepting Christ makes, as he says, neither slave nor Greek nor Jew. We are all one in Christ Jesus, right? That the family of God's chosen people is if you accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior.
Of course. So does that mean ethnically Jews are God's chosen people, or is it spiritual?
I do believe that they are still God's chosen people, and it says that at the end of times that a large portion of them will accept Jesus Christ, Yeshua, as their Lord and Savior. Now, the ethnic question, you'll have to ask a pastor to that, but I do believe that the nation of Israel and the people of Israel, that God's covenant remains on them, that God's covenant remains on the nation of Israel until the end of times. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hello, Mr. Kirk. My name is Dylan Galvan. I'm a homeschooled 15-year-old. And since you are absolutely destroying some of these guys, I think it seems fit to ask this question. I want to be able to defend my conservative Christian beliefs as passionately and accurately as you and other great public figures like Candace Owens and other conservative commentators. Do you have any tips on how to prepare myself with facts and information? Just overall speaking aptitude to take on the not only the left, but the evil influence that this world consistently promotes.
Yeah, so the best advice, you're 15, that's amazing.
Yes,
the
sir.
Best advice, give it up, that's really amazing, it's really good. The best advice I could give is take learning very seriously. And that's what I do, is 2 hours a day I'm listening to podcasts, taking Hillsdale online courses, you know, reading books, whatever it takes. I went through the first 5 books of the Bible in original Hebrew, taught by, you know, a pastor. That was, you know, done by Dennis Prager and by a pastor. That's a lot of work. If you want to test how much you love learning, go through Leviticus in the month of July. That is really something, I'll tell you what. It blessed me greatly, but that is not exactly, it's not light stuff, right? It's not Proverbs. So learn. Take learning seriously. You have never learned enough. If you think you've learned enough, you're wrong. More podcasts, more books, more questions. And finally, be inquisitive. Find people that know more than you and ask them questions. Why do you believe that? Find people that have wisdom, not just knowledge. So knowledge is practical knowledge. What's the capital of, you know, of Texas, Austin? What is the capital, whatever it is. Wisdom is the knowledge of things that don't change. Wisdom is eternal knowledge. What is love? What is mercy? Are human beings naturally good? Should you forgive murder? Should you forgive killing? Are there different types? These are things that don't change. The United States Constitution was not written on knowledge. It was written on wisdom. Because it was not written for the times, it was written to stand the test of time. The problem with colleges is they have tons of knowledge. How to make a vaccine, you know, how to put a rocket into space, and no wisdom. Where does wisdom begin? With the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Thank you.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
My question is that we've all seen the footage of what happened when Hamas attacked Israel. They came through with trucks, and they came through with paragliders as well. We also know that Mossad is one of the best intelligence agencies in the world. We actually send our own intelligence agency to get trained over there by them. And I do understand that it was a holiday for them, but how does the best intelligence agency in the world basically not even see this coming? Knowing as well that there's been situations like the Levant affair, USS Liberty, and deliberate attacks by Israel on the American government, how do we know that they're just not trying to pull our strings?
Yeah, this is what made me go viral last week, right? Which is hilarious because I'm super pro-Israel, but I'm not afraid to ask questions, right? 20 hours response for the IDF to go to some of those kibbutzes. That's worthy of asking questions. Now, I said explicitly in that video clip that I went very viral that I'm not suggesting that Netanyahu did something intentionally. But here's what I am saying. Fact number one, Axios article shows that a equivalent of a council of decision makers were briefed on Friday night before the attack that there was growing chatter and activity on the Gaza border, and there was a deliberate decision not to put it on high alert. The why we don't know, the what is unmistakable. Fact number two, 1973, 50 years ago, and I'm not saying this is what happened, but you better know about this, Golda Meir was briefed by her military, and they said Egypt and Syria are about to invade. We can strike now and we can save lots of Jewish lives. And she said, do not strike. Let them hit first or else the international community will be very, very upset with us. That's 50 years ago to the date that Golda Meir made that decision. The best answer and the one that will probably come out is Israel got complacent. Probably. Or one that people are not talking about. Maybe Netanyahu was double-crossed within his own government. Maybe that there were not. Maybe there were spies within the spy agency. I'm going to continue to ask the question, a 20-hour response in a country the size of New Jersey. That begs a big explanation. And more importantly, America is significantly underwriting the Israeli government, $4 billion a year. We as American taxpayers deserve answers to this. We deserve answers. Also, if we're going to get into a regional or world war based on an intel failure, so, we pay for this. What are we buying, right? I got smeared as a Jew hater, an anti-Semite, and conspiracy theorist because I said exactly what I just said. And I refused to back down despite all the smears thrown at me because I learned during COVID. I learned when they told us that it came from a bat in the Himalayas. I learned when they told us the vaccine was safe and effective. I learned when they told us that ivermectin was horse paste, that you better keep asking questions because it's the only thing that keeps us free. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Hello, Charlie. My question was about, what are your thoughts on the body positivity movement, and how do you feel about people being called fat phobic for just trying to get healthy? For example, Lizzo being insulted by her fans for going on a juice cleanse.
Yeah.
I don't know.
How do I feel about it?
Yes.
I mean, I think everyone knows the truth. Like, if you called your girlfriend and you say your girlfriend looks like Lizzo, how would she react?
I wouldn't be very happy.
Huh?
I wouldn't be very happy.
Yeah, that's the answer to the question. So if you said, hey, you look like Lizzo today.
I mean, yeah.
Wouldn't go well. First date, I think you look like Lizzo. Everyone knows. Everyone knows that when you're obese, it's not pleasant to look at. A lot of people struggle with weight. I certainly have. I've lost 30 pounds in the last year. I'm open about it. I talk it on my show. But there's also, you have to understand, obesity is a choice. Being fat, everyone has different bodies, different metabolisms. But you can make specific life choices to trim down and slim down. And for people that, you know, you struggle with that, honestly, God bless you for trying to prioritize a healthier life. And I say this all the time on my show, and I get emails from people all the time. Charlie, you're too mean, you know, to the you know, fat people and all this. I say, wait, hold on a second. I'm not being mean. I actually might be the dose of truth you need to hear. Because type 2 diabetes, whether it be cancer or whatever it is, and I don't think as a society we should act as if it is acceptable or normal, especially for teenagers to be so obese. You know, 50% of kids under the age of 15 are clinically obese. And if you struggle, you have my support. But if you give up and you wallow in being that and act as if it's normal, I think that's anti-American and honestly pro-victim mentality. And it isn't what you eat. And some people say, Charlie, no matter how hard I try, I can't lose weight. Okay. I mean, that I don't believe that, to be honest. Like, there are certain things you can do to improve your life. And we are a fat country right now. We are way too fat of a country. And we need to be honest about that. And from someone that, honestly, I'm glad I was fat shamed when I was fat. It needed to be done. And it was the best thing. I was like, wow, I'm overweight. Let's lose some weight, right? Stopped eating carbs. Intermittent fasting was great. And honestly, For those of you that need to hear this tonight, consider it a challenge to be better because it's in your control. The best emails I get, though, are when people say, Charlie, I lost 40 pounds because of your program. And I feel better. My marriage is better. I'm walking every morning. And so I don't mean it in a shameful way. I mean it in a challenging way. I mean it. You could do better. We need to do better. And I think the body positivity movement unnecessarily creates a sense of low expectations. I don't like that. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks. We'll take a couple more. Any more disagreements, you can go to the front of the line. Yes, yes, ma'am.
Hi, Mr. Kirk. My name is Elise Galvan. I'm also homeschooled. As a Christian, I feel that progressive Christianity, New Age thinking, and watered-down teachings are incredibly harmful.
Yes.
And that the modern church is failing my generation especially. And yet it seems like there's not a lot of like leading churches and Christian figures talking about how it affects the youth. So I was just wondering, what advice would you have for Gen Z and the youth to be taking steps not only in the social and political areas, but in the church setting as well?
Amen. I love your heart. Thank you. That's a really great question. For those of us that are believers, we have a serious problem, everybody. Church attendance is down. Churches are falling apart, but not every church. Jack Hibbs's church is growing like crazy, for example, if you know Jack Hibbs. If you speak the truth, people need it in a broken culture. We have been told by certain mega church pastors that if you water down the gospel and water down the truth, that's how you're going to win people over. I think tonight is a testament that is rubbish. Look at tonight. You have people from all different walks of life, of all sorts of different backgrounds, that want to hear the truth, not a watered-down version of what the media is already saying. And that's what the church needs to be. It's like the church, look, I'm honestly very outspoken against some of these wokey pastors, right? Where their wardrobe budget is much bigger than their book budget, right? And they, the skinny jean type pastors that do a TED talk with a rock concert with organized parking and a coffee bar. And how about this? You preach the word and trust in God enough that when you do that, that people will be healed and moved and transformed by that. You do not water it down to seek approval from the world. Thank you so much. Thank you. We'll do a couple more. Yep.
All right. Welcome, Mr. Kirk, to
Thank you.
Alma mater. And most certainly, welcome to the greatest country in America, Texas. All right, I need to premise my question by giving you some information. I think you'll find it quite relevant.
Super quick, because I want to get to a couple more.
Okay, I'm going to really try. Okay, so I wanted to get your perspective on a postmodernism in terms of its application into the current social and political narrative. I started with reading Judith Butler's work and found some significant flaws in the thinking. As an example, Butler's gender performity is very unclear to me in that it is filled with contradictions. But when she was pressed on clarity, this is what she said. It is better to not define the sexualities or binary terms, as well as it is equally better to not define postmodernism.
Yep.
This by itself almost seems designed to deliberately keep definition out, because if she had to define her theory, she would have to admit its flaws.
Yes.
This is what Pluckrose,
Helen Pluckrose,
and
cynical theories, yeah.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, I've read it.
They called it the blurring the lines.
Yep, I know.
And then you have the same thing with Richard Rorty, where he says,
I see myself. You got to ask the question. I'm sorry. We're running out of time.
Okay. So based off that, my question is, how would you help the audience to reconcile the harmful effects in this nation's universities of the twisting of this philosophy in a way that students are not being taught how to think, but what to think?
That's a great question. I'm sorry to accelerate
it, okay?
But here's the thing. The left hates hard definitions, okay? They love this swirl of vagueness, and they want people to manifest their own resentments and not have complex, nuanced, or more importantly, distinctions. To go back to a biblical context, in the beginning, God created separation and order, right? He created expanse and separation. They want to get rid of all those contradictions to create a oneness. And so postmodernism at its core is basically you get to determine what is right or wrong regardless of what is actually objectively true. You saw that on display earlier, right? Which is like, well, if you think you're a woman, you're a woman. If you think you're a man, you're a man. That's at the root of postmodernism, that you are in charge. Remember what I said, the two things? There is a God and you are not him. That is the antidote to postmodernism. Believing that there's a transcendent, eternal, one God that created the universe with a moral order for you to live with an eternal date of judgment that you have is the best way to go up against a postmodernist viewpoint, which is they say there is no truth, there is no justice, there is no meaning, and there's no reason why you're here. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. I got to get to the next question. I'm sorry.
I've been following you for 4 years, and I actually wrote a book because
thank you
inspired me.
I'd love
CRT.
To take a look at it. Yeah, right. Macy will take it. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, final call for disagreement. We'll do a couple more, okay?
Happy belated birthday, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yep. I've ranched from Montana all the way down here to South Texas, and I've seen like many ranchers and farmers have to sell out or significantly reduce operations due to Democrat policy. So I want to know what you think about the future for farmers and ranchers in America.
Yeah, look, I 100% stand with farmers and ranchers. It is so wrong what is happening with the federal government incursion, with the lack of land rights. We have to take back our land in this country, by the way. The federal government has way too much land. We got to take back our land. If a Republican ran on taking back our land in Arizona, it would be unbelievably successful. Yeah, I don't have much to contribute to it. I don't know, you know, the policy of ag that well. But honestly, one of the reasons why we're a free and prosperous country is we're able to produce our own food without having to import it. And I, for one, am very worried about the hyper-corporatization of our farming. This is one of the, I do not trust Bill Gates to be in charge of our farmland. I do not trust Monsanto to be in charge of our farmland. In fact, I want a decentralized farming system of people that have been there for multiple generations, that know the land, that are there for the right reasons, to be in charge of our food supply, not Seattle billionaires that are coming in to try to literally end meat in America, which is what Bill Gates is doing. So that's the best answer I can give. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Charlie, the Holy Spirit is on fire in you tonight.
Oh, you're very sure. Kind. Thank you. Yeah.
Real quick, one thing. So how do we get men back into the household? How do we get these older men who have abandoned their families? How do we get them back to take care of their kids? And how do we educate the younger generation to not help to not make them repeat those same mistakes?
Great question. By the way, fatherlessness is not just in the black community. It's just worse.
Absolutely.
In the black community, right? This is one thing where I think we need to bring back shame culture. And I know that sounds, you know, unchristian. If you impregnate a woman and you abandon her, you should be shamed from decent society. You should be shamed from decent society. We should not act as if that is acceptable. That is cowardly. That is wrong. And honestly, it's not acceptable, but it drives a lot of abortions in the country, right? I'm not saying that's a reason for abortion. I'm not justifying it. But a lot of them say, well, I don't have a man to take care of me. Couple things. Again, part of this is idealistic. Part of it's not. We have to change the way that we view sex. Sex is not just about pleasure. It's about connection. We should try to tell young people to save themselves for marriage, regardless of how much condemnation that makes you receive. But purity culture, I don't hear about that at all anymore. It's like been completely obliterated. We've like dropped that battle. In fact, I think young people are more likely to receive that message now than ever before. But more importantly is we have to build up what does it mean to be a man, right? And being a man is not just spreading your seed and running around. Right? Being a man is finding your life partner and building a family, nurturing and protecting and developing something beautiful. Thank you very much. Now, I got it. Next one. Next one. Two more.
Thank you.
We'll do two more, everybody. Is that okay, everybody? Two more questions? Is that okay? Or great.
So first, I want to say thank you for coming to UTSA. We appreciate you. My question was, what's your thoughts on populism? It seems like there's a divide within the GOP between neocons and the more populist element, so I want to know your thoughts on that.
It's a great question. Yeah, depends how you define populism. I think I'm 100% on board for a lot of the populist elements that are ascendant right now. But we also must understand populism can go too far, right? You must be anchored in conservative values. I call them biblical values or whatever it is, right? So populism is listening to your voters to see if they are saying something that is not being addressed that your current political apparatus is ignoring, right? For example, trade. If it was not for the populist movement, we never would have a robust discussion on importing piles of plastic in from China into the country. That was a legitimate concern that middle America was saying, hey, why are you shutting down our factories? And for years we said, sit down and shut up. And the populist movement, to their credit, you know, really was able to platform that as a major issue. But here's the thing, is you have to be careful not to overly pander to masses, right? Because crowds are not always right. At the same time, you should not despise them, and you should not shut them up or suffocate them. You should listen to your voters, but it always should come back to a conservative type perspective, and you must use prudence when actually implementing the policy. I'm on board, though, for 99% of what's happening in populism in this country right now. I think it's good that we're finally talking about immigration, foreign wars, trade deals, and honestly, if it was not for populism, we would not be talking about the chemical castration of our kids and the butchering of them through this trans agenda. That's a great thing that the populist movement has brought forward. So if the public is howling, they might have a good reason. And the contempt of old school conservatism is we're not going to listen to our voters ever. They're wrong. We know it's better. Instead, it's like, well, maybe they're telling you something you should listen to. Maybe they're telling you that their purchasing power is going down and they can't afford homes and inflation is crushing their back and gas prices are unreachable and the border's wide open and they're sick and tired of you because you can't even pick a Speaker of the House. Thank you so much. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Final question.
Mr. Kirk, it's an honor to speak with you.
Thank
honor
you.
To have you here. I listen to you on the radio as
thank
much
you.
As possible.
Thank you.
And you were fantastic in 2,000 Mules.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Please. Most people don't acknowledge I'm even in that movie, so thank you. Yeah. it's my, like I'm in the movie. Have you ever seen it? My favorite is when people ask me if I've seen it. I'm in the movie. Yeah.
The movie. I have supported Donald Trump. I block walked for him. But recently, my very liberal family member has come up with a legitimate question that I don't have an answer. I'm stumped on it. The prosecutorial abuse that he suffered, I understand that. But one case in particular, I'm really unclear on, the sexual harassment case that came up, I think went to trial a
with
few months
Eugene
ago.
With E. Jean Carroll? Yeah.
Yeah. What was the result of that? Was he convicted, acquitted?
That's a great question. Sorry to interrupt. It's a civil trial, not criminal. So he had to pay like $6 million. You should just watch Donald Trump's 5-minute explanation of why that is a bunch of rubbish. It's hilarious. And I'm not going to have to kind of redo it. And the first thing he says is, go look at a picture of E. Jean Carroll and ask yourself, would Donald Trump 30 years ago? And it's just, that's him. I'm just saying. That's his words, not my words, okay? And he goes through this whole thing about, like, it's in, you know, in, like, a bathroom in Tiffany's. It's, you know, but if honestly, if a liberal, like, I got to be honest, like, not you, but if a liberal family member is worried about a rigged jury civil decision of an alleged sexual harassment 30 years ago, when our country's on the verge of World War III and the dollar's collapsing and the border's wide open, like, I think these people have a very serious case of Trump derangement syndrome at that point. I mean, that is incurable. Thank you very much. All right. I want to just say in closing, Turning Point USA, I believe, is the most important organization in America. We are on high school campuses, college campuses, TPUSA Faith, pushing the line forward every day. Candace Owens is also on tour, reaching millions and millions and millions of young people every day. Here's my closing message. Some of you probably came tonight and you say, Charlie, I've done everything that has been asked of me. Everything. I walk doors, I'm a precinct committeeman, I bought the pillow, I've done everything that has been asked of me. By the way, promo code Kirk at MyPillow.com, just in case you're wondering, okay? We as patriots must have resolve of not surrendering. They are counting on your quitting. They will not win if we do not break. I know times are dark. I know it looks bad. But we have an unbelievable community, a remnant, if you will, of people that are filled with faith, filled with spirit, filled with courage all across this country. We still have breath in our lungs to save this republic, and we're going to scrap for every inch. We're going to start more chapters. We're going to do more with the school boards. We're going to influence more people. The opposition is petty, and they're shallow, and they're fragile, and we are getting tougher by the day. I'm not going to guarantee victory, but I will guarantee this, that this movement that we are building is going to define history in a profound and beautiful and magical way, and they've only started to see us fight. God bless Texas. God bless you guys so much. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company. Like super woke.
When I grow up,
I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up, I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder.
Just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, RedBalloon.work.